Whenever you catch up with a friend or family member you haven't seen in a long time, what do they always ask? How's work? Great. You? Great. We play this rehearsed scenario every year, even though deep down it might not be all that great at work. Work could be a living hell, but no one would really know unless they really asked. But what is it about work that fucking sucks so much? How come, without fail, every workplace has its problems? Not including the interpersonal issues that come with working with complete strangers, working for an actual company can sometimes be a fucking headache. Who knew that earning a living could be such a shit show? When it comes to understanding the intricate bullshit of the workplace, I can't think of a better person to chat with than Richie Carlisle. Richie is the co-host of Juked Radio, a podcast about the expanded universe of workplace culture from the perspective of two individuals with a life of experience in sales and customer service. They talk about everything from asking for a raise to workplace monitoring to office parties. If the sweet, sweet release about venting on work makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside, then I'm sure you're going to love today's discussion. So kick back, grab a drink, and tune in to another installment of Lag Radio.
Hey.
Yo.
How's you doing?
It going?
It's going good.
Pretty good. Pretty good day. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Richie Carlisle. So, everybody, I just want to introduce our guest. This is Richie Carlisle, the host of, is it Juked Radio?
Yes.
So it's Juked Radio, and one of the ways that they explained it is it's Office Space. If Office Space had a love child with Half Baked, I was listening to their podcast a couple days ago, and it is an incredible conversation to just sort of listen to. Richie and his co-host, Crooked Halo, they have these discussions about workplace culture, and you learn everything from, you know, office surveillance to relationship dynamics between employees and employers. But I'll go ahead and let our special guest talk about that. Richie, can you tell me your background and had in your life that led you to create a podcast about workplace culture?
Well, I've been a career financial services professional for the past 15 years, selling all types of life insurance, auto, home, car insurance across the country. Been a supervisor in customer service and sales and a trainer for quite some time. I've been wanting to do a show like this for the past 10 years because, you know, for those that don't know what a Xennial is, we're the people that were born between 1977 and 85. So a lot of us grew up in an area, in a generation where we were told, go to school, get good grades, get your education, and life will be good for you. Well, a lot of us came out of college around 2000 to like 2004. If you were coming out of school at that moment in time or entering the economy, it wasn't anything for you. It wasn't anything for you. The market had crashed. A lot of employers were basically what we would like to call juking people. They were screwing people for compensation. You had a proliferation of companies that would just send out patently bogus job descriptions saying it's a management training program. You get to the job and they have you selling trinkets and coupons to restaurants and stuff. And you had just loud music and they would sell you on dreams. Well, if you can do these things and hit these metrics, we're going to give you your own office or things of that sort. And none of that shit happened. None of that happened. So, and plus in the financial services area, a lot of the pay is commission only, or the base pay is pretty small. And it's mostly commission and bonus driven. So after seeing, you know, that experience and having witnessed stuff like people sleeping with the boss to get to the top, or owners of companies playing with the compensation structure 5, 6, 7 times in a year, you know, for years and years and years, you know, I wanted to, you know, talk about it. I did radio shows for different things, but this is something that I really want to talk about because I'm not the only person that's been through it. You know, if you've worked in a call center structure, you know, a call center environment, you've seen a lot of the things that I'm talking about where, for example, you may have a golden boy that will get fed like premium leads or a golden girl that would get fed premium calls and stuff. Or you may have like the same 4 or 5 people getting all the great prospects, leads, calls, what have you. And everyone else is dealing with people that aren't interested in anything that you're selling, don't even know how you got their number, don't want to talk to you, where the person that I'm speaking of, the golden boys and golden girls, are getting people that may have did a quote before, they just want to say, they just want to buy their policy, or they may just want to call in and just purchase. And we've seen different organizations that would drive traffic or drive preferential traffic to maybe a handful of people and say, well, they're doing it. How come you can't do it? And we'll say that the playing field is equal. And it's not. You know, I haven't even gotten to the other, you know, biases that exist because we got plenty of time to talk about that. But just seeing different things like that or seeing where a company will take 6 months, 12 months, 18 months before they officially hire you in as an employee, then you have to wait another 3 to 6 months to be eligible for your benefits to kick in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny crazy. that you mentioned about the interview process, because I was recently applying for work. I found a job a couple of months ago, and you know, I feel like the job, the interview process has changed significantly within the last few years. Like I remember going on Indeed and for the first time, like going through automated interviews or doing these cognitive tests. And it seems like the whole interview process has been like optimized to the 10th degree, where, you know, what used to be a simple process of, oh, let me go ahead and send my resume, I'll get a call back, I come in, I go ahead and talk, has now been expanded into like this 12-step program that you have to go through just so you can actually talk to a physical person.
Exactly. Or you would have, I remember in the early 2000s, where, again, this is when there was no jobs for no one. You would have companies, and I don't know the name of the company exactly, but I was living in the Columbus, Ohio area, Go Bucks, and they had a big dumb sign right in the front when you walk in where it says all applicants must have 2 years of experience must have worked for their current company for 2 years. And what's crazy is that pretty much everybody that looked like me saw that sign, just walked out. And it was a security dude, a big white security dude, and somebody else sitting with them watching all of us walk out with a shit-eating grin on their face. And that stuff like that, those cognitive tests are a complete waste of money, because a lot of the companies that have those tests, those are also the companies that are always hiring. And that's something that you will see, you know, over the past 15, 20 years. Those companies that had you jump through all those hoops just to get an interview, they're always hiring. Always. They're never, and it's a reason why good companies rarely hire. A good company may hire maybe once a year.
It's weird. You're absolutely right. I know that, you know, as someone who works in advertising, and I work with a lot of different businesses, small to medium businesses, I've noticed that the workplaces that have a very strong culture, that, you know, they have good benefits and whatnot, you have people there for like 5 years and there's like maybe one opening. Whereas the positions that you're talking about, where like these companies always have like a ton of positions open, when you actually go and interview, like you can see like why people why there's such a high turnover rate. Like, you see the process. I had an experience where I applied at an insurance company as a copywriter, and I went through like four different rounds. I did the online test, I did a cognitive test, I did like a written test, I did like two in-person interviews, and then I got the job offer. But then they had to do like a background test, and I have nothing on my record or anything like that. And then for some reason, that test, they found something, but they couldn't disclose it, they couldn't say anything, so then they just canceled my offer. And it's just weird that they have,
Really?
yeah, oh
That was, you
yeah,
know,
and
can I speak frankly and freely on your platform? That was
go
bullshit.
ahead.
That was bullshit. Because,
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
the background check primarily is designed, you know, they want you to pretty much tell the truth. And most companies that are above board and fair dealing, if they do find something, they're actual about it. Whoever the firm they hire, they're actual about it. And then you say, oh, yeah, you may have missed some information or whatnot. They just, you know, whoever, for whatever reason, they just didn't want to give you the job. Because they can't tell you what it was, or they ask you, well, what about this? Or if there's a gap in employment, they'll ask you about that gap of employment. And if they really want you, they'll say, well, you know what? That's not even pertinent to what you do. So we don't even need to know. You know, companies have a lot of, they have a lot of flexibility. If they really want you in their organization, they're going to bring you in their organization. If they don't, they will find a way to exclude you. But yeah,
Oh yeah,
that's bullshit.
and I was I'm wondering, and I want to ask you, with all of these added steps of filtration, like filtering out, and what they like to call screening or pre-screening, and I sort of liken it to Disneyland, where it's like you have to get into a line to get into a line to get into the line, and that's what the interview process sometimes feels like. Why do you think all these layers are being added? Like, who do you think they're trying to exclude, or who do you think they're trying to essentially have thrive at the end of this? Like, it seems like if you have these filters, there must be a very specific type of person, a very specific profile that you're trying to meet.
Oh, Becky and Bill. Honestly, Becky and Bill, or someone that looks like you and me, that looks like, that talks and walks and thinks and speaks like Becky and Bill. That's the short answer.
And to be honest, that's, I think for anybody who does the due diligence of like, when you go to the interview and you actually research the company and look at the headshots of everyone who works there,
If you
here in
look at the
Texas, it's like,
leadership, look at
oh yeah.
the top layers of leadership. And if it looks like the National Republican Convention, then you may not want to work for that company, no matter how much money they're offering you. And earlier in my career, I had just finished my MBA, and I was with a Fortune 500 company, had an interview, a headhunter reached out to me. And I didn't do that. I didn't do that. I was just happy to get the offer. I get into the offer. And you know, I didn't last there too long. I was excited. I have an MBA. They was like, we don't give a fuck. And you know, pretty much set, you know, they set up an environment to where I fired myself. And looking back on that experience, a lot of times when we achieve a level of education or reach a milestone in our career or our life, we think we did it. We're good. I can rest. Unfortunately, there's no rest. None. There's no rest. And it's just better, you know, for you to find a company that is a good fit for things that you value personally. You know, like for me, I value flexibility, time with my family, and freedom, you know, for me to do a really good job of what I do, and for you to leave me the hell alone. Like me and my co-host, like she's like, hey, you know, pay me to the order of, pay me what I'm worth, leave me the hell alone. And don't, you know, and that's it. Because, you know, again, it's particularly in the financial services arena, the people that bring in the money, like I'm a sales professional. So, you know, we pay for everything else. We pay for everything else in an insurance company. The people that sell insurance or selling stocks or mortgages or 401ks, they pay for everything else. They pay for copywriters. They pay for adjusters. And well, actually, the adjusters, they make sure they figure out, okay, what we're going to spend the money on. But primarily, we pay for everything else, but we're the people that they mess with the most in terms of the money, you know? And a lot of times when they play with the compensation package, it's not because they don't have the money or sales are down. It's because what we want to pay this is about making sure that the stockholders can, you know, buy another yacht because they're on special. They got a special on yachts. And I mean, honestly, and I hate to even take it there, but there's really no really explanation. And I've talked to people in that income bracket, and that's exactly what they did. It was like, great, tax break. tax break. I mean, these people have named boats and yachts and houses, tax break, tax refund. Honestly, I mean, that's what it's about. It's not even about staying competitive or staying in business. This is not what these things are about. These are about making sure that the top 1 or 0.1% stay that way. And it's disgusting because the resources are there. And over the last 40, 50 years, you know, the top earners have made it through legislation and through company policy, through corporate policy across the board, you know, have made it to where they can avoid taxes and take a dump on employees. Like, we say it all the time on our company that, you know, particularly in America, the economy as a whole is a slave economy. It's based on the transatlantic slave trade. And a lot of the, you know, things that we enjoy, like paid time off or PTO, overtime pay, maternity leave. If you were with a good company, they give you paternity leave. So they give you like 2 weeks for you to be with your newborn child. Like the company I work for, I had 2 weeks of paternity leave. So, you know, and my company, they only hire once a year. So, but these things were earned through unions, through unions going through all sorts of things. And people in this country don't like unions. I don't understand it.
You know,
I don't get it. But then they're like, hey, I got this much PTO. But then you want to go to the union. It's like, dude, without the union, they'll pay you $2 a day. If companies could pay employees $2 a day, they would. This, which is why they set up overseas. They go to overseas, and a lot of your forward-thinking companies, they have their corporate policy so that however they operate in the United States is how they operate abroad. They don't switch up. It's like, hey, even though your laws over here in non-white country, okay, non-European, non-Western European country, even though your labor laws are pretty lax and, you know, y'all let us do whatever, we don't, because this is not how we do business. But then a lot of companies don't. So that's, but a lot of the companies that don't care, they operate like that. They don't, when they will pay you $2 a day if they could.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've worked with companies that are like that. You know, as a copywriter, you know, I write for companies that need English copy, and the Philippines tends to be one of the first go-to.
I've done some copywriting work, and man, these American companies want to pay you $10 for 5,000 words.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like,
get some experience. I'm like, man, that's not worth my time. You want me to spend ten, and you break it down for a 5,000 word project? That's like pennies per hour.
Oh yeah, and it's like they already pay you know, American copywriters so little, but they'd also contract out copywriters from the Philippines because a lot of them speak English, and they would pay them, you know, pennies on the dollar. And like you said, it's if these American companies just didn't have the hurdle of, you know, sometimes Filipino writers will have, you know, they won't be able to write particularly in the American style because there might be certain like phrases and sayings that they might get. Mm-hmm. If they could teach their Filipino writers to write that way, and then in the end pay them like $10 a day, they would fucking do it. But it's, I think this conversation that we're having about, these companies that don't provide these benefits and also these companies that are trying to be part of this new wave where they have all these office perks and snacks and these things that are seen as benefits and these things that are seen as perks. And, a lot of times you'll see these companies that are really tricky where they'll have a snack bar, but they won't have benefits. They'll have a pool table and they'll have ping pong and a little arcade and a little gumball machine, but you have significantly lower pay.
Yes, we call that a fake Google. We were actually talking about that today. We talk about company perks, and a lot of times, companies, they know they're underpaying you, and particularly in Northeast Ohio, you have a lot of companies here that pay, they underpay for a lot of positions, but because of where we are, they're like, well, yeah, we're underpaying you, but you're doing good for where you live. And they're straight up about it. They're straight up about it, and definitely cutthroat with it. But that's the environment we live in. I mean, a lot of it's due to tax avoidance, tax avoidance and just naked greed. It's disgusting because we have the resources. I mean, it's one thing, and again, I have an MBA, so I understand that if a company does not have the resources to pay you, understood. But that's not the case with a lot of these organizations. They got the money, they just don't want to pay. Wow. Where 3 years ago, you had the owner of Papa John's like, I can't pay for benefits and I messed up my business model. I'm like, dude, no, man, you still want to give up your money. You want to have a 30,000 square foot house.
Oh yeah, and you can
Or
see
five of them. That's what it is you want to
yeah, and you can see this like these offices taking so many of these shortcuts and trying to create this like I think one of the things that irritates me the most are offices that clearly don't want to give you a fair shake, but then they'll do these things. It's kind of like my old job where they won't pay you good enough, but then they'll have these they'll encourage you to do team building exercises and to be friends and to and you actually you and your co-host spoke about that on a recent episode about you feeling like you're not your you and your coworkers aren't buddies. You're not trying to be friends and hang out and be chummy. Like you're there to work and get your paycheck and do good work. And but there's just so many organizations that feel like we need to do this team building. We need to do these exercises because we're a family. But also, you're not going to get that raise. No, you're not going to get, maternity leave.
No, a lot of the companies that you're talking about, they want to try to create a startup atmosphere. And I was a part of a startup for about 5 years. And at first, it was a family atmosphere, but as you know, the beginning of the end is when the startup had won a major contract with a major insurance carrier and started getting some of those checks, and everything changed. And it was situations where you would have multiple changes to the comp plan, to the compensation structure, 4 times in a year. And then people that could keep up kept up. People that couldn't were let go. Or it was blatant. It was crazy. Like a lot of the stuff that we talk about is so definitely motivated by that experience. Or seeing the owner, do, morally questionable things. You know what I'm saying? Or seeing people that have, women and men have, shop moves with management or what have you, and all of a sudden they're your new team lead. And it's like, really? Or, well, they're performing at a high level. Could we listen to some of your calls? No. Why not? I mean, if you're so good at what you do, show us how you do it. In healthy organizations, and particularly in a healthy sales environment, you will pull someone's call or you would go with the seasoned pro and see how they close deals. But these people that were, receiving the preferential treatment, you didn't see how they did it because, they wasn't doing it. They was getting them sales after hours. getting sales
So,
after hours. So you'll see them leave in a lift with the supervisor. It's like, oh, really?
So you were mentioning earlier about you working in the insurance field and working in sales, and oftentimes there's this, I guess you could say stereotype or stigma that salespeople are, they just kind of laze around and they just make a couple sales and then they make all this money. What would you say is the sort of the reality of actually working in sales in the context of working for these corporations, as opposed to, being out like at a retail space or whatnot? Like, I know that one of the things that you've talked about is office surveillance and how.
You like that
Oh yeah, I love that episode.
episode,
And talking about, just this constant like watching of every single minute and second and thing that you do to ensure that you're as productive as possible. What were your experiences like working in sort of a sales environment? What are sort of the politics of that, and how have those jobs changed? Have they gotten better? Have they gotten worse? Like, how have they sort of changed in your opinion?
But a lot of companies are mixing it up to where a lot of us can work from home and may not have to come and go to a location for an extended period of time. Like the company I work for, I'm a telecommuter, so I work from home. I had to stay there for about 3 to 5 months to, train, learn the business, learn the way that they want us to conduct business, perform, hit certain metrics, and I was able to go home. Because it's cost effective, for what we do, so that you don't have to come in or commute or have to pay office space rental and utility bills for people to be at a location when they can do the work from home, and you have the software to manage and monitor your staff. Like a lot of the, particularly for financial services, a lot of the monitoring is required by law. It's required. Like for example, for one, we're in the middle of what's called a Medicare enrollment, open enrollment season. So when people call in and switch their Medicare plans, and we have to record each of those transactions is by law and keep them on file for a period of at least, I think, 10 years. So it's a legal thing, so you would have to do it. In terms of just like overall for a sales rep, I mean, when it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's bad. It could be down, but it's the life that we chose. And for us in America, for you to be able to maintain a decent quality of life, a lot of companies are not paying a base salary or a base hourly wage to keep up with that. Average rent, the last time I checked in this country, is $1,400 a month. That's nationally. That is a, I mean, and that's the average. We're not even talking about in places like Washington State, New
Oh,
York,
yeah.
California.
You're talking about rents
I don't even
like
want to talk about that. Like you're paying
over 2,000,
$3,600 a month
3,000.
for rent in New York, and New York is absurd. And like just to let you know, we don't like talking to New Yorkers because at first I was like, man, they are cheaper than shit. But when you're paying $2,000 for an efficiency, you have to be.
Oh,
Because the thing
yeah.
is that a lot of those jobs in these areas with extreme, living expenses are not paying what you think they are. They're not.
Oh no.
They're
Yeah, that's the
not.
funny thing is that like there are a lot of jobs that you would think that they would pay, a minimum of like 50K or 60K or whatever, but some like
They're not.
oh yeah. So I guess,
But like for a sales rep, I mean, it's for you to be able to afford to live. You need a bonus structure in place to make up for the shortfall of the salary or lack thereof. Like, I live in Ohio, so I mean, the economy, the cost of living is not as high as other places. I mean, it's not cheap either. Like, for where I live, like the average home is maybe, say, $1,000 a month on average. I mean, you get some stuff for less, got dodged some bullets, but I mean, for the most part, you're looking at about $1,000 a month, but companies are not paying that as good. But the thing is, in places like South Carolina, cost of living is actually higher and they're paying less. Particularly in Myrtle Beach. Myrtle Beach is paying straight slave wages down there. Straight slave wages. But they're selling condos on the beach for 100,000 for a one room condo. One bedroom on the beach.
So with so many of these toxic workplace structures, they're essentially designed to pinch as many pennies as possible. And since you talk about these different issues on your podcast, what would you say is a thing that you're most worried about? Like, what is the thing that keeps you up at night in terms of all of these workplace related issues? Is there one thing in particular that you're like I'm keeping my eye on that? Like, I feel like this is going to be a big problem, or it's going to be a bigger problem down the line. Like, what's on your radar?
For our industry, as long as you're in, if you're a producer, then chances are it's not going to change much because our industries are regulated. Whereas, if you're more so on the customer service side, or even on claim side, a lot of claims use drones to fly over homes. Like I can say, hey, like when you purchase a home, one of the first questions that someone like myself will ask you is, how old is your roof? Is your roof in good shape? Yeah, my roof is still brand new. Drone fly over and see that your roof is older than
Wow, I didn't know they did that.
shit. So that's the thing. A lot of stuff is going to be automated. I mean, that's why I'm very receptive to what Andrew Yang has to say.
Oh my
I'm very
God.
receptive to that. And at first, I wasn't. I'm just like, eh. But I actually went to his website, looked at his platform, looked at different issues that I personally care about. Like me personally, I want reparations. I do. I'm not budging on that. I'm not budging. I will not budge on that. A lot of people say it's too much, it's too expensive.
Don't budge on it.
But I'm at an award ceremony. Our station was nominated for an award, so people's walking in and out. But I'm not gonna budge on that. But because my thing is, for foundational Black people, we built this motherfucker. Give us our bread. Everybody else, any other people group, has gotten compensated for past wrongs. It's in the DNA of this nation to mistreat us. It's actually part of the business model, actually. But the problem is that everyone else here that is not, or white can be sent home to their home country, like countries. Where you gonna send us? But yeah, but like, I like a lot of the things he's talking about. I don't know if he's gonna win, but and I noticed, have you noticed, and I talked about this earlier, with Bloomberg, he's jumping in the race. I think he's jumping in the race because the big these progressive candidates, they don't like him because people like Andrew Yang, people like an Elizabeth Warren, and others can win. And if they win and you have a blue Senate, you have a blue House, the House is already blue, and a blue White House, you're gonna see drastic changes to a lot of stuff. They're gonna have to pay more in taxes, and the big money don't want to do that. That's why Bloomberg, in my opinion, is getting in. But the things that I'm looking at is things like automation. I'm looking at, just, I mean, really, and it's a real problem. I'm looking at automation. I'm really thinking about the environment because, we can talk about, the things that us individual humans have going on or don't like or what have you, or traditional abuses and things of that sort. But if we're dead, none of that shit's gonna matter. Yeah, our world. Our world is like really under attack. But me personally, my thing is reparations, the economy, automation, and the environment. Those are things that I care about.
So on those things that you're talking about, I definitely want to go ahead and talk about automation. Obviously, this is a subject that I'm very passionate about. But first, on the topic of reparations, because I know that a lot of people have different like philosophies on how actually is implemented. From your perspective, how would you see it being played out? What do you think is the best way for reparations to be? Or a reparation program to be set up.
I think that the majority population will burn this nation to a crisp before they cut checks. So, I think that free education, I think that a housing voucher and a voucher for a car would be sufficient. And I'm saying that because, number one, there's no checks being cut. And it's the equivalent of 40 acres and a mule. Because if you have transportation, if you have education or job training, it doesn't have to be college, it can be trade school or what have you, and if you have a place to stay, a house, a horse, you know, 40 acres and a mule, that's what it is. That will be the thing that will that will do it. And plus, it'll be over with, because frankly, I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of talking about it, but at the same time, I'm not going to let it go because I'm looking at all these other people groups getting paid. Where's mine? Where's mine? And I gave the most. And I continue to give them, you know, just for my people group. We continue to give them most in terms of inventions, gold medals, Super Bowl champions.
I mean, even
come on, man.
I mean, even just the simple culture. Fact that you were talking about the essential success of America, the business model was really founded off of slave labor, and I think for so many people, they see the distance of time that has passed and they think that, oh, well, for some reason, you know, if there is enough has elapsed, then, oh, we don't have to worry about it. But
no,
it's like
money.
We're still benefiting from
no,
all of that still.
It's the money. It's because it's in the trillions of dollars. Because the thing is, if you look at the things that happened to the Asian population in World War II, people got mm-hmm. paid because it was over a 4 to 5 year period, and they were paid relatively quickly, and it was easy to be like, okay, here's $15,000, $20,000 or whatever $1,000. But because it's been almost 200 years since it happened, and interest and the equivalent of 40 acres and a mule, do you know how much land is worth for 40 acres of anywhere in this country? They would have to cut $1 million per household in Black Mule. They're not doing that. They're not going to do it. And the thing is, if they did it, it would be such an economic boom for this country because, in my personal opinion, and I'm just keeping it real, a lot of us have put it right back into the economy. We're going to buy a house, a car, and consumer goods. We're going to give it right back to you. Why wouldn't you want that to happen? But, and it's just, the thing is that it's really, it boils down to jealousy, you know? It's jealousy because if you look at what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you had a community of Black people that were very prosperous, and they burnt that shit to the ground. It was based off of jealousy. It's like, hey, okay, we don't want you living amongst us. No problem. When we were on there, oh damn, they're doing good. We can't have that. And they this has been done in Wilmington, North Carolina, Rosewood. It's like whenever anybody of color does well. And I'm not going to just leave it to us because, I mean, whenever any person of color in this nation does well, if you do too good, if you do too good and you want to help too many people look like you, they're coming for you.
And, you know, it's so weird how we have a culture in this country that, you know, we're so eager to demonize those who haven't made it as, you know, oh, people who are lazy, people who haven't tried hard enough. But as much energy as we put into shaming these people, we don't put in that same energy for actually helping them. And it's funny because when you look at all the studies about how to help people in need, so often the answer is just help them, like give them the resources. Like if you have a company and if you have a business, like if you want your business to flourish, you pay your lowest workers more money. You like if you boost the morale, if you actually take care of your people, mm-hmm. It'll pay off tenfold. And the same applies for a country. Like if you invest in your people, if you make sure that they have enough money to take care of themselves, and they will contribute back to the economy, they'll contribute back to the communities. And yet we still are.
They're going to buy houses. They're going to buy cars. Mm-hmm. They're going to go on vacation. Mm-hmm. They're going to buy more clothes, shoes. They're going to buy more stuff. Like Michael Moore wrote a book some time ago. I don't remember the exact title, but he had a chapter in there where he was talking about how like the majority population needs to just stop fucking with Black people, just stop fucking with them, period. And how so many, you know, white people are just afraid or nervous about us. And he was like, you know what, if you just leave them the fuck alone, they'll be cool. and, you know, or don't want them to be, to have to live where they live or make what they make it and things of that sort. He was talking about, well, I have a lot of black people on my staff and they're great as fuck. And I pay them good. And I pay them good and they're just regular damn people. It's, you know, he had talked about that, you know, in his book. And I was reading that book because I read it around 9/11 when he had released 9/11
Fahrenheit 9/11. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I was looking at that and also looking at Bowling for Columbine. Yeah, I'm kind of old, mm-hmm. but that's the thing. It's just, it's really, I don't even understand. It's so embedded in the DNA, and it's like other, you know, non-black people of color. It's almost like for you to advance, you have to adopt that hate too. If you do that, then you're going to do well. And that's why you see a lot of people. That's why you can see signs that says Mexicans for Trump. Haitians for Trump. Because I don't understand.
It's wild.
It's a lot of self-hate across the board. You know, and the thing is that a lot of these people, or you say Muslims for Trump, or Muslims for Bush, or things of that sort, or people who vote for a conservative candidate that's against them even being there, but they figure, hey, as long as they're not messing with us, we don't care what they do to those insert minority, and then get deported. And, like, what happened? But I thought we were, like, we're sitting here like, we tried to tell you. We tried to tell you.
And you know, it's like... I shared a video earlier about, you know, this clip of this guy who was just eating a sandwich on the BART station. A cop, you know, pulls him aside and says that, you know, you can't be eating here. He tries to arrest him and give him a fine. And it's just, you know, there's in line with what we were talking about, it just seems like there's so many systems within this country that are incentivized to profit off of black and brown people. Like, I, sort of calling out my own communities, it's sort of like certain Asian businesses that open up shops in neighborhoods that have a lot of black folks, and they open up these shops knowing that the primary customers will be black, and yet they exploit them and they essentially just treat them as a money pit. But they don't actually want to be part of that community. And I guess it's going in line with what you're talking about, like, you know, people just need to stop fucking with black people and stop trying to always,
you know, respect us and leave us the fuck alone. I mean, it's like, in Cleveland, where I live, you have a lot of communities, you know, that do invest in the communities, like a lot of, you know, Arabs, whatever, they do sponsor the baseball team. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They do things in the community. They do, you know, and they're loved. But then a lot of them are, you know, very opportunistic, and it's a one-way situation where you may have somebody with a corner store in the east side in a really rough neighborhood, but they live in Parma. And that's like, you know, a ultra-white area where I really don't go at all, if I have to, but that's the thing. You have a lot of that going on. But then, you know, during 9/11, it was like, let's stand together. I'm like, shit, they're looking for you. What do you mean, let's stand together? I'm not standing at all. They're looking for you. They're messing with you. And it's like, and like, I really rock with your page because you're fair. And the people that are on the page are fair and they're honest and upright. And I don't want to be... A friend of mine, he used to call me conspiracy brother. Because I would point out stuff like this. And then, you know, we saw during the Obama years, you know, when Obama got elected, I think that people, Americans, lost their damn mind. Because, you know, the deep-seated racism and hate, it came out. And then, you know, which is why we have the person we have in office now. But I was like, I don't even want to say I told you so. I hate the fact that I have to say I was right. I wish I was wrong. I wish that I was wrong about it. But the thing is, it's like going back to the corporate structure. A lot of these companies model their attitudes toward workers. It's straight from the plantation. It is. And the thing is, the overseer didn't make much money. You know, the person that would oversee, you know, slaves, they didn't make much money. They lived next door to the slaves. They may have had a couple. I mean, honestly, they didn't make much money. It was just, you know, the slaveholder, the dude that owned everything, would give him a couple more crumbs than the slave, than the overseer, and told him, you're way better than these no good niggers. But they were poor. They were poor as fuck too. But they held on to that, and they hold on to it now. They hold on to it even now. It's like, dude, it's like you're looking at me, you're mad. Like, if you ever saw the movie Rosewood, when they went to burn the guy's house down, one of the people that's gonna burn the house down, he was like, they got a fucking piano. I'm thinking of piano. and that's what it is. I mean, and I just wish that it's like, man, just, you know, if you really feel that way, if you really don't want us here, give us our money and tell us to leave. And this country will be the lamest country on earth quickly with the quickness. It'll be uber lame. And wherever we go, they're going to come in droves. if they thought, hey, we don't want no more black people, no more Asian people, no more Mexicans. And what's crazy about Mexicans is that if you know anything about Mexico, Mexico stretched from where it is now all the way up to fucking Washington State. That was Mexico. Like, that Mexico was like Colorado, Utah, Nevada. That was all Mexico. So it's like you're telling them to go back to where you came from. It's like, dude,
I've been here.
You know, and I've been here, but it's just... I don't understand it, man. It's just, so, you know, on a human level, I don't get it.
So talking about things on a human level, there's another issue that you and I are very passionate about that is on a non-human level, aka the automation of work. Right. I know that it's sometimes difficult to talk to people about automation because so many people have this interpretation of automation as like, oh, you think that these iRobots are going to come in and just steal your jobs? But I don't think people really are cognizant of how it plays out. And especially if you work in offices where you're at a desk and you deal with software, especially if you've been in these industries for any length of time, you know, you've seen new apps that are integrated that happen to displace a whole department. What can you say about what you're worried about automation in terms of, you know, the future of work? I know that you said you worked in insurance, and insurance is another sector that has been talked about in terms of being at risk of automation. I mean, really, so many of these types of office jobs, even copywriters to a large extent. I know that I think it's like Goldman Sachs or something like that. I can't remember which company. They hired a copywriting automated service, and they're piloting it. And it's kind of funny because, you know, about 10 years ago, when I was first starting to, you know, look into getting into copywriting, one of the reasons why I got into it is because they said that, you know, this wouldn't be automated. So how do you feel about automation? How do you feel about it? Are you worried about it in terms of replacing your work? Are you worried about it replacing any types of work?
You know what I have your eye on? I'm not as worried as a lot of other people should be, because from a money perspective, from a greed and legal perspective, I think they will keep a human presence, you know. And the thing is, like, for a life insurance application, you really don't need a rep. You can have someone do a retina scan and figure out a lot of information about the person's health by their retina scan. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to a center, give them some blood and urine or what have you, and then issue the policy based upon that. You really don't need a rep. The only thing is, with like a product like life insurance, it almost always has to be sold. If you don't have a rep, you know, trying to sell it, then it's not going to get sold. And like for homeowners and auto insurance, that can be automated as well. I feel more for that than anything, because, you know, a person can say, I'm about to buy a home. Okay, great. And then fill out this application online. And that's it. You know, that is all. People want a personal, you know, presence for those particular products, but that's more that's going to be automated too. It is, because eventually when it comes down to corporate greed, people don't, you know, people that have the money don't want to pay. And if you can pay a machine to do the work, then fine. But that's gonna affect, you know, my industry, typically financial services as well. It's just that from a legal standpoint, if the machine erroneously does something or if the app fails, mm-hmm. then those companies will be on the hook for trillions of dollars. So for those particular industries, I think you will always have some sort of a human element because of that if the app fails. But for a lot of stuff like customer service and things of that sort, you can say, you know, when you call in now, what are you calling for? This. You can do a lot of stuff by just talking or going online, and people in our era, and particularly your era, are a lot more savvy with the internet and don't need to talk to a person. You only talk to a person when something's wrong. If they can have the app, you know, the artificial intelligence be able to interact with customers and solve problems, then you're going to see more automation. But ironically, I think the system for it not to work would be to keep people dumb. Dumb, uneducated, or unsophisticated. And what I mean by that is people call in and they don't understand, you know, how a particular program works or how a mm-hmm. particular financial product works, or things of that sort. A lot of people that are sophisticated, I want this, and this, or they have their declaration page or proof of insurance page there, and they can just go down the line and just plug those in and get a price. That's all you really have to do, you know.
And so many of these jobs, have
to do, honestly, but most people are not, or either too lazy, just aren't sophisticated enough to do that. And it's asinine to me and to my co-host because we're in the information age. Anything you want to learn, you say, "Hey Google," and they'll tell you. But people don't. People will rather spend 20 minutes trying to figure out when they're going to die and what they die of than things that are important. So I think that the fact that our educational system is in shambles could actually stretch it out a little longer. If we were on pace with other Western nations or nations like China, Japan, then the automation would affect us a lot further. We'll probably be one of the last places where automation will fully take over, I think, based upon the fact that, you know, like my co-host will say, country full of dumbasses. It's going to take a while, but eventually it's the reality. It's a reality, and I'm not really trying to – I don't really want to insult anybody. But, I mean, let's just be honest here. A lot of people here are willfully ignorant. You know, so that's actually good for us, that people are willfully ignorant. You
know? So we talked at length about the issues that are going on in the workplace and the way that these things are changing. What do you see as sort of the modern solution to a lot of these modern problems? You know, shortening the work weeks or shortening the hours. How do you feel about solutions or policies that could be implemented to improve the workplace?
I think that, number one, I'm all in favor of everyone having a minimum income. I'm in favor of that. I'm also, honestly, I think that a lot of stuff that we do work is, I think that the fact that we live in a society where if you don't work, you don't eat is stupid, because we have the technology to where we can actually have it to where machines and other stuff do a lot of the stuff for us, and we don't have to do too much of anything except chill. But the thing is, the fact that people with most of the resources want to keep most of the resources. Greed keeps the whole thing going. People wasn't so damn greedy, we wouldn't really have to work, because we have the technology to not do shit. Honestly. But from a realistic standpoint, I think minimum income will help. I'll go a long way so that we can, you know, people that are innovators and creators can have the ability to work stuff out for themselves. Because eventually, a lot of the new jobs aren't going to be jobs. It's going to be more entrepreneurial anyway, because of the technology. So you need income to spark that.
And I 100% agree. I think there's so many of the problems that exist in our society So many of them could be avoided with a minimum income. I mean, if you look at the source of people getting into petty crimes, so much of it is motivated by short-term income, you know, like being able to put food on the table. And not having a minimum income, it also forces people to find work that they don't actually want to do, that they might not be suitable for. And, you know, I think a lot of us have been in that experience where it's like you're at a job that you hate, but you want to find new work, but you obviously can't quit the job that you're in right now. But if you can't quit the job that you're in right now, then you don't have time to interview for a better job. Whereas if you had a basic income, you could actually say, hey, I'm going to quit this job. This job is really toxic, but I'm going to ride on this minimum income and I'll just be frugal and I'll just, you know, I'll apply for these X amount of months. But at least I have, you know, my basic necessities taken care of.
I also think
Like,
companies need to pay more taxes.
oh, yeah.
Tax avoidance is major. If companies would pay what they're supposed to pay in taxes, a lot of this wouldn't even be an issue. Prices across the board would go down.
And there's so many ways that companies utilize different strategies to avoid taxes and to avoid paying their fair share. And yet you go on, you know, Glassdoor and you go ahead and take a look at the salaries of people, and you see that sort of salary cliff where it's like, okay, these are our salaries and these are their salaries. And, you know, you sort of see like that middle ground of like, hey, why isn't there more distribution in this? Like, if they are saving all this money by not paying all these taxes, then where is that money going to if it's not going
Most
to
of the people that's
us?
making all that money aren't necessarily smart for real. They're clever. That's a show topic in and of itself, being clever versus smart. A lot of people are actually being able to do anything worthwhile. Like our president, he's great at branding. He's great at convincing people to give him more money to lose. But in terms of actually producing anything worth anything, no. And that's the problem. It's like, hey, you know. I don't get it. I mean, like you said, it's just a major drop off in pay, but the talent doesn't justify the extreme pay or the extreme differences in pay, you know. And like particularly in an office environment, you have a lot of people like myself who are seasoned veterans who don't want to be in management because the first step of management is like operations. Okay, where you're responsible for a team of people to produce. And usually, when you're a new leader, you get the worst producers. And the pay is doesn't it doesn't you know match the work that you have to put in and the responsibility. It's like, I don't want to be a manager for what? Because I mean, I'm good at what I do, but if these guys and ladies don't listen, or they don't, or what if they all work hard but just don't hit the numbers that somebody else in a different office across the country arbitrarily set? Then I'm gonna get fired. You know?
Yeah, and
I'm gonna get
it,
fired.
I have found that so it's like it's incredibly stressful where you have a lot of these metrics and goals that you need to hit, and sometimes there's like you said, they're so arbitrarily set that sometimes there are jobs that you feel like, what is the point of this work? Like, where is this going to? It's just
Now
it's made it so.
the actuary and the fiscal people, you know, they didn't crunch the numbers to where, okay, so executive A, you can get your Ferrari this year if you make the plan like this. That's really the answer. I mean, it's not, you know, a lot of times you will have someone who is not educated say they're fucking us, and you're like, what are you talking about? But they're right.
And so like so often it you really get this feeling that the way that certain businesses are financed, whether you're talking about employee pay or benefits, so much of it seems like it's built around the afterthought of first, let's go ahead and see if we how we can fund the lifestyle of these particular executives. Once that minimum lifestyle of they live in this house and they live in this gated community, blah, blah, blah. Once that's taken care of, whatever is left over, we'll use and disperse among everybody else.
And that's and the thing that's what happened. I mean, and the thing is, I blame the baby boomers. They're horrible. I mean, these are the people that actually started that whole bumpy, that bumpy lifestyle. They were like, "Hey, why are we paying these people all this money? Fuck that! What are we doing?" And they did it, and now they have the audacity to say, "Well, how come you're not doing this?" Like, dude, I'm not. First of all, nothing left. You took it all. You took it all and spent it on cocaine. There's nothing left, bruh. You took it all. I mean, but this is the thing, and but boomers get upset. But I mean, it's like, hey, I mean, facts don't lie. These are the same people that party like rock stars in Woodstock, came home after Woodstock and was like, damn, I gotta get a job.
It's weird. Like, I was thinking
Not
about
in
how I was thinking about how white rich boomers, them being sort of one of the most privileged groups of people sort of in the world. When you think about they created this culture where they said that, oh, well, it's okay to have this lifestyle where at 50 I'm retired, I have a Ferrari, I have all this and blah blah blah. It's like they created the culture that justified the workplace environment where it's like, oh, well, like you see that I have all this excessive wealth, but
Hostile
that
takeover.
is, yeah, that like this is what I earn, this is my keep, and this is just part of the system. I played fairly, blah 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 blah.
Mergers and
But
M&A, mergers and acquisitions, man. And that's where we're at right now. You have all these, you got about four or five, telecommunications companies, three or four movie houses. And I mean, it's like it went crazy. It's like it's straight monopoly, and we allowed it. We as a people allowed it to happen, but we were sold a bill of goods. And it's like people keep falling for the same stuff over and over again. I mean, it's absurd. I don't.
So we talked about the sort of downsides of work, but what would you say is are the projects that you're working on right now that are more meaningful? What are some of the things that outside of your 9 to 5, what are you up to? What kinds of projects are you hoping to kick off?
Well, we're working on the show. I'm trying to get it as many as possible to listen and hopefully so I can quit, obviously. But we're working on making it a better viewing experience and also just better, technically, so it sounds better. And so when you listen on Spotify, you don't hear the little stuff, or things of that sort, so we can actually pitch it to a broader audience. I think that what we have, is something that's worthwhile and that people can relate to. I mean, everybody has a podcast now. You get your phone and go in your room and say, "Hey, I'm," and I don't knock that. That's wonderful. But it's like we came up with the idea for our show. We wanted to talk to everybody else that's not trying to be a star. We're regular people. Regular people. We want to talk about things that we are dealing with on our jobs or just the everyday grind. The everyday grind, and talk about stuff that you can't talk about at work. But then talk about it, bro. You can't talk about that shit at work. You're fired. Notice I haven't dropped the name of my employer. I haven't dropped the name of the employer. Not trying to mess up my pool to the warm up at all. But we're trying to, definitely make a better product, reach more people, get some merchandising, and from there, the sky's the limit, and reach out what other people like yourself, and have more people listen to us, and I'm open to, to take it as far as we possibly can. Like, you know, our motivation, inspiration was, you know, just the work experience that we have. Office Space, the movie. That was dope. We're not Office, you know, like, yeah, it was just awesome because they captured, you know, that energy in the late 90s that was going through, and now we see where it led. You know, we see where those things, we didn't learn our lessons, and here we are now, you know, and where we're at now. So, you know, I wouldn't mind doing possibly a TV show or something. We talk about real work experiences, like, particularly if a job that you hate, and you're sitting in your car, you know, rolling up before you go in because it's like, damn, I got to go in here or whatever. And deal with, you know, the stupid stuff. You know, actually go behind the scenes of stuff of like that goes on. You know, because people can relate to it. You know, and there's a lot of good people out here that have been misused and abused by employers and supervisors or taking advantage of. We had talked about the movie 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton. She had talked about how bosses, you know, manipulate workers and have the workplace snitches, you know, that'll tell on you for a quarter an hour raise, you know, back then and now, you know, or people that want to be in management that's going to do whatever they got to do to get there, you know, and still don't get the promotion or things like that. But like I said before, you know, we're looking to obviously expand on the show, definitely, you know, have more products to sell, you know, to the people. And take it as far as we can, you know. Like, I know that we have a lot of work to do so that it's more, so it's cleaner, you know, production-wise. You know, but that's one thing we want to do, reach more people. I mean, it's like the social media algorithms, they make it really hard for you to get the people.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
I mean, God damn. I remember I had a podcast before, and I would pay for a boost, and I had, like, no followers and had, like, 2,000 followers for, like, $20. You can spend $100 and get 5 people to follow you. It's discouraging. But, you know, you keep plugging ahead because you never know. You never know. You know, that one show you do, the one clip you do, it can really, you know, it can change your life.
It can take off, yeah. And that's the thing that's it's exciting, and it's also sometimes discouraging about podcasting and putting out content, is that there's just so many people that, like you said, you know, before there was an age where you could pay $50 and you could boost a post and really just expand your reach. But there's so many people who are producing, and there's so much competition out there that it tends to be oversaturated. And so that's why it really helps to have these very specified niche subjects. And, you know, one thing that I really liked about your guys' podcast is that you do talk about these issues that you wish that you could talk about in the workplace, but you really can't.
HR is not your friend.
Oh, because it's going to be logged in, it's going to be documented, and, you know, it's going to come up in your performance review or something.
You're going to get fired. You're going to be out looking for jobs and trying to do those bullcrap assessments and skills. And then it's like you wake up one day and you're 55 and it's like, man, you would be perfect for this executive position, but we're looking for sales reps. I'll do it. Nah, you don't want to do that. They just make companies make assumptions about you.
That's why I really appreciate that you guys are having this conversation, and that you mentioned earlier about that you're not interested in sort of this, like, let me interview the biggest celebrity that I know kind of a thing, and it's more about, like, an actual honest discussion.
But, you know, yeah, I'm just saying. You know,
of course. Yeah. I mean, if the opportunity, if you guys end up growing, hey. By all means, if you can go ahead and land that awesome interview, that'd be great. But I also like that you provide that space for sort of the everyday conversation for people who just don't have that voice. And I think that there, you know, we need a lot more of these types of platforms. And, you know, I'm grateful that you came on the show. I'm grateful that you have that podcast. Everybody, if you're tuning in, please give a big thank you to Richie Carlisle from Jick Radio. It's been great talking to you. Did you have anything that you want to go ahead and close on? Anything that you want to plug?
Absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about our show sponsors, FinalBlackDollars.org. They have a wonderful movement for Final Black Dollars. Go to www.FinalBlackDollars.org. Find out more about that movement. Wristwork Custom Bracelets, wristworkcustom.com. Have some very nice
wristwear. Ooh.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I look like I'm in a management. I'm not. Also, please follow us at Juked Radio, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on Spotify, Stitcher. Please follow us. Please listen to us. Please share. You know, please rock with us. We definitely appreciate, each and every person that listens to the show. You know, definitely, rock with us. Again, it's at Juked Radio everywhere. Definitely
perfect, appreciate it. And Richie, if you can, after in the comment section, just write a link to your podcast so that way people can go ahead and follow that link and follow you guys.
Absolutely. I'll definitely do that.
Perfect. Awesome, Richie. Well, it was really great talking to you. Hopefully, we'll invite you sometime to come back again to have another chat.
Will do. Absolutely. Next time I make sure my co-host is available. She's like, you remember the show Home Improvement, Wilson?
Yeah.
She's Wilson. She's the female version of Wilson. She doesn't want to be on video or nothing. I mean, it'd be me, it'd be her blacked out.
Just the voice behind the curtain.
Yeah, that's and this is all the episodes when you look up YouTube videos. Just me. It's just me.
I appreciate her voice. Hopefully we can get her to come on some other time.
Absolutely.
All right, Richie. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
Thank you for listening to another installment of Lag Radio. Lag Radio is an independently produced podcast recorded and edited here in my home office. So I appreciate any and all support. Whether you share this podcast with your friends on social media or sign on to become a sponsor, there are plenty of ways that you can help out. Speaking of which, if you're a small business owner or a person of color who wants to promote your platform, business, or brand, contact me and you can become a sponsor of Lag Radio. We'll have you sponsor some of our episodes and you can even join on to be a guest of the show. If you'd like to listen to previous episodes, you can find Lag Radio on anchor.fm/lagradio or you can listen on any major podcasting app like Google, Spotify, or Apple.